an author's relationship with his author. But now it's 7 o'clock and time to join Andy Crane in the Cat's Whiskers studio.
Just after 7 o'clock, Sunday night, Radio 4 can only mean one thing. Welcome once again to Cat's Whiskers. And thank you, as ever, for the letters to our postbag, especially those on the subject of nail-biting cures. The most popular theme seems to be make the nails taste bad. Helen Dark from Cardiff suggests dipping my fingers in perfume. And David Hall from Walsall in the West Midlands has two suggestions. A, get a bottle of bitter aloes to paint on my fingernails. If this doesn't work, he suggests smearing my nails in mustard. But Rachel McFall from Cambridge has the most extreme suggestion so far. She suggests I wear woolly gloves all the time. Now, Rachel, that would probably cure the nail biting, I don't doubt, but I haven't got enough colours, you see, to coordinate with all my outfits. Thanks, too, to Mandy Butterworth from Rochdale, who's written us a very interesting letter, telling us that during Easter she's taken a trip to Nepal with her parents. Now, of course, our Cat's Whiskers doctor, Dr. Pete's just come back from there, and in fact, Mandy wrote to Dr. Pete, telling him that she was going and asking him if there was anything she could do to help the people and children in Nepal. Dr. Pete responded by phoning Mandy, telling her about the guy you heard about last week who was trodden on by the elephant, and telling her that he needed a crutch. So, Mandy is going to take an aluminium crutch with her to Nepal to give to the gentleman, and she's going to take a recording of Cat's Whiskers as well, which is great. So, Mandy, do drop us a line when you get back and tell us how the trip goes. On the subject of Dr. Pete, tonight on Cat's Whiskers, Dr. Pete comes face-to-face with a wild tiger, Andy Crane comes face-to-face with a wild Adrian Morehouse, and Stanley Bagshaw comes face-to-face with a 22-ton whale.
In Huddersgate, famed for its tram lines, up north, where it's boring and slow, Stanley Bagshaw resides with his grandma at number 4, Prince Albert Row. One day, when our Stan was out walking, he happened to see his friend, Ted, who was down at the council allotment sitting outside his old shed. "It's a very nice day," said our Stanley.
"It certainly is, my old pal. Shall you and me go for a walk along by the Grub Street Canal?"
They walked along slowly together, spotting flowers and things that are rare. When all of a sudden Stan shouted, "Hey, Edward, just look over there." "It looks like a water pipe's bursted. That water's blown up like a gale." But Edward said, "No, I'll tell you what though. Do you know what, Stanley? That's called a whale." The whale stared at Ted for a moment, then let out a strange gurgling sound. Edward, who understood whale talk a bit, listened carefully, then wrote it all down. "What did he say, Ted?" said Stanley. Said Ted, "Well, from what I can hear, he's just on his way to the Arctic." Said Stan, "Well, it's not along here. The Arctic is up near the North Pole. He's really come way off his track. This canal only goes to Huddersgate. He'll have to turn round and go back."
"You can't turn round here," said Edward. "There isn't enough room to spare."
Stan thought for a bit and then said, "I know. That's it. The boatyard. There's lots of room there." "We could ride on his back to the boatyard. It wouldn't take long. It's quite near." The whale said.
"Do you hear that?" said Ted. "In whale talk, that means good idea."
Along the Grub Street Canal they sailed, the big whale, Edward and Stan. They were heading for Wallace's boatyard, and that's where their real fun began. The Huddersgate Angling Society, renowned for the size of its catch, each year held a grand fishing contest, and today was the day of the match, Now, it happened that Wallace's boatyard was where Maurice Ratcliffe was sighted. When the huge whale sailed round the corner, our Maurice became quite excited.
"Whale, look at this maggot," cried Maurice. "Go on, have a bite, just for me."
"You won't catch him that way," said Edward. "Whales only eat plankton, you see."
Now, Maurice was quite disappointed. But Stan had a rather good thought. Perhaps if you took this sharp hook off, the whale would pretend he's been caught.
It was near 4 o'clock in the club room. The judges were getting quite tense. When at last the hour came, the Lord Mayor exclaimed, "Time's up! Let the judging commence!"
They inspected the catches of Ken, Sid and Tom and were not much impressed by the size. So, what they saw when they came to the boatyard, well, it came as quite a surprise. Cried the Mayor,
"Eh, by, come, that's a big un! I reckon our Maurice has won. How much does it weigh?"
The whale said. Said Ted,
"It says 22 ton.
The Huddersgate Post and Times editor was dreaming about the day's news. When the telephone rang, he awoke with a clang and became just a little confused. He rushed to the photo department.
"Quick, get your camera, Miss Fee."
When he told her the Grub Street Canal was on fire, she said,
"Sounds a bit fishy to me."
Miss Fee hurried down to the boatyard to see what the fuss was about. When she got there, she found a large whale turning round and one or two folks helping out. Cried Miss Fee,
"Can I have your attention? Would you pose for a photograph, please? Could you move back a bit? Just a little bit more. All right, everybody, say cheese."
"We're all in canal," the Lord Mayor cried.
Said the vicar,
"You're all wet. How droll."
By the time they'd climbed out, the whale had turned round and was setting off back to the pole.
"Well, that's very odd," muttered Maurice. "He mustn't have liked being caught." "I should think he's gone home for tea," said Ted.
"By gummy," said Stan. "That's a thought."
"Have you had a nice time, Stan?"
said Grandma, when our Stan got back home for his tea.
"I've just been for a bit of a nature walk, Gran.
Nothing much ever happens to me."
Ah, Stanley Bagshaw, king of the understatement, eh? And in 2 weeks' time, you can hear Stanley Bagshaw and the 14-foot wheel. Got to welcome two very special guests into the Cat's Whiskers studio now, because about 4 weeks ago they did a 1-2 for England in the 100 metres breaststroke at the Commonwealth Games in Auckland. One of them well known to you as a Cat's Whiskers presenter, Adrian Morehouse, and his friend James Parrock. Welcome to the Cat's Whiskers studio.
Thank you.
Hi.
Got the medals with them. What's that design on them, James?
It's a kind of shrub which is native to New Zealand.
On the other side is the... it's a chain, and they sort of crown the Commonwealth crown with a date in the Commonwealth Games. The front side is always the same, except the date, obviously.
The best thing about it is around the edge, you have engraved into it the event for which you won the medals. So ours, both of us, say swimming 100 metres breaststroke for men. So that makes these unique in the whole world.
Can I touch the medals? Do you mind?
Yeah, yes. No problem.
Because I've never done this before. I'm quite.
They're not chocolate. Obviously. They won't melt.
They won't melt. Are they actually gold and silver?
I don't think so. They may be gold and silver plated, but I doubt it.
They're quite heavy, and these are they. There they are.
I'll scratch them.
Gold one on this side, ruined. Silver one on that side. Did you, you know, immediately phone family and friends and everybody, or were they all jamming the switchboards to you when you won?
Well, my family were there, my parents were there, my brother had flown over from Papua New Guinea, where he works now, to see it, so they were all there, so I didn't make any phone calls to James.
However, I was stuck on the phones for about an hour, while various people from the press and family and my sister called.
This is your first major medal, James, yeah?
Yes, that's right. It was a very proud moment when the three English lads, Adrian, myself and Nick Gillingham, who won the bronze, paraded around and stood on the rostrum and watched our flags go up. But for me, to win a silver medal at my first major games, really, apart from the Olympics, this time I had a realistic chance of a medal, so I was delighted to win silver.
How does winning a gold medal change a sportsman's life?
You go away for 6 weeks and you get out of the realistic world. I mean, so you go away and you're part of a team and you're in a different country and it's different weather, it's summer out there and it's really nice. And then you come back to training because your coach is on the phone saying, when are you getting back into swimming? But it's nice in a lot of ways because people respect what you've done. You know, it's like they appreciate the amount of training you put in and they can here you can show them the gold medals. It's not all been in vain.
What do you do with a gold medal? Do you like get a little...
it's in a box, as you can see there, but nobody else can see. It's in a nice little blue box, and when you keep it open, it sort of presents it quite well. My mum keeps them, to be honest with you. She puts them on mantelpieces in the house at home, and I just let her have them, because she likes them better than me.
I never sleep with mine by my bed, I think.
I think you should indeed. What's next for the two of you in the immediate future? Are you off abroad training anywhere exotic?
Just holidays and stuff, just resting a while. We go training. I'll be back training in March time. And then it's training in exotic sunny Leeds.
Where do you fancy going?
I don't know. Where do you want to go, James? I mean, like Hong Kong sounds
good. Hong Kong sounds
good.
Yeah,
I think
California.
California next
America,
week,
yeah.
But swimmers, you need your coach around. So if our coach, we stick with the coach, and the coach in Leeds is a very good one. And if he goes abroad and takes us for 2 weeks, then we'll go with him.
Very, very many congratulations to the two of you. And thank you very much indeed for coming in, because I've never seen a gold medal or a silver medal for that matter. And now I've seen both at the same time. Just completely freaking me out. Time now for the birthday list. And because of our guest's success, I can think of no better word than this. G-O-L-D. Swiss Club members celebrating a birthday this week are Luke Heyburn, Anne Whiteside, Sally Higginbottom, Stephen Hughes, Thomas Dennelly, Ruth Clare and Andrew Cassily, Anthony Atkin, Francis Ebbs, Elizabeth Ray Allison, Thomas Hato, Sophie Elwes, Wendy Bedgood, Mandy Griffiths, Joe Horton, Judy Barnish, Alison Train, Nicholas Hodgkiss, Catherine Green, Susanna Waldrum, Catherine Madison, James Ducker, Caroline Leach and Lizzie Dawson, Catherine Milner, Kirsty Slee, Natalie Morrison, Laura Bramble, Benedict McDonough, Nikki Thorpe, Rebecca Hudson, Belinda Cole, Luke Fitzgerald and Claire Hunt, Veronica Wolfe, Michael Bond, Laura Wright, Claire Skelly, Keen Selena, Stella Fletcher, Jenny Goffin, George Ritchie and Zoe Weller, Heather Ashley, Sally Hall, Laura Cade, happy birthday Caroline Dietrich, Matthew Darby, Giles and Claire Edwards, Sarah Millington, Catherine Willis, Jennifer Clode and Catherine Grimshaw, Andrew Parkins, Catherine Brewerton, Sam Muldoon, happy birthday Heather Pickering, Matthew Sylvester, Catherine Franklin, Neil Martin, Rachel Tittler, Alice Derbyshire and William Price. Not forgetting Thomas Yelf and Elizabeth Matthews. Happy birthday to all of you from all of us here on Cat's Whiskers. Time now to push that Pulitzer once again and find out who's won the T-shirt. One, four, seven, three, five, one. And my Pulitzer tells me that that is the club membership number of Caroline Dietrich, who will be 10 on March the 2nd. A very happy birthday to you, Caroline. A T-shirt on the way to you. And you share your birthday with John Bon Jovi of the band Bon Jovi and Mikhail Gorbachev. Also celebrating this week are Fatima Whitbread and our very own Dick Dogsbody. Dr. Pete has joined us again this week. Pete, we were talking briefly last week about your encounter with a tiger. How did this happen?
Well, I'd been travelling through Nepal, Andy, and we got to the heart of the jungle. We arrived in this untouched area of West Nepal where it really hasn't been spoilt by man. And what you're going to hear is a Sunday afternoon walk in the jungle with my friend Kamal, who is a shikari, a tiger tracker. And we go off on this elephant not really knowing what to expect.
A ladder going up against the elephant. Going to have a word with this elephant, I think. Giving me a fairly careful going over with his eyes, giving me a very old-fashioned look and wagging his tail, flicking his trunk up in the air. The elephant's getting down on his back legs, front legs. There's a large, square, flat saddle type arrangement on the top of his back. Well protected, he's got some bags of straw to stop the saddle digging into his back. He's got his eyes closed. He's having a bit of a doze, I think.
Mainly we're looking for animals like deer and monkeys and boar and what we have here. And it's very, very important to be quiet when you go into the jungle. It's the best way to look for animals. Have a good ride then. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
So, here we go. Sunday afternoon ride in the jungle on the elephant. You'll be listening to this on Cat's Whiskers on a Sunday evening, and you can just imagine this jungle. It's an amazing place. There's a pool here over on the left where the animals come to drink. Tall trees, semi-shade, it's hot and dry. This is not the monsoon season, so it's not sticky and hot with mosquitoes and leeches. There are various butterflies flying around us at the moment. Trees with vines going around them, hanging down. Tarzan isn't here, of course, but it's the kind of jungle much loved of the Hollywood filmmakers. High up in the tree, there's a monkey. And there's a well-trodden path here. The elephant has been this way before, I get the feeling. Piece of useless information. The elephant is the only animal to have four knees. The other thing that strikes you, we're following an elephant that the other lads are on, is that at any one time, only one leg is off the ground. That's right, Carmel.
Yes, certainly.
Bumping along, if you've never been on an elephant, it's a wonderful feeling. The elephant's quite happy. Like going over very bumpy ground on a bike, but rocking from side to side as well. Carmel, this is elephant grass we're moving through now, is it?
Yes. At places, it's over 25 feet high. We'll be getting into taller grass as we go deeper into the jungle.
In this river that we're about to cross, there are lots of fallen trees, and laying asleep on one, having a Sunday afternoon doze, perhaps waiting for Cat's Whiskers to start up later if it's available in Nepal, is a huge python about 12 feet long. The other elephants you can hear moving up. We're moving along now. We're now going down into the river. Elephants having a drink. The elephant has just smashed a small tree out of the way. And another's about to go. Bulldozing its way towards where the other two elephants are to see what they are calling. They must have spotted something.
Tiger.
Tiger?
Yeah.
Did you see it? You did?
Oh, unbelievable. Did it run off?
Brilliant. Something moving there. Goodness me, tiger. Can you see through the tree? Just below us is a deer that the tiger has killed, and it's in front of us in the long grass.
Huh? No, it's a spotted deer. Just recently dead. In fact, if we could actually go down, we can actually feel the blood. But right now, it's not a good time.
No.
And the tiger's in that grass there.
Just ahead of us.
I'm shaking like a leaf.
It's about 10 metres right in front of us.
Where?
Directly in front of us, but you can't see it now.
There's a small hole there.
Okay.
From that corner.
There, I can see it.
I can see it looking at me. Stay still. Oh! My God!
Tiger's coming for us.
Oh my
I have never been so frightened in my life.
Oh, that was it.
That is the most astounding experience of my life, Doc.
He's still there.
I can see him.
Where?
Oh, let's get out of here.
Let's get out. Can we get out of here, please?
Pete, that sounded absolutely frightening. I mean, was it as frightening as it sounded?
Yeah, I mean, I thought my time had come, actually, Andy, when I looked down into this enormous mouth with the teeth and the tiger eyes looking at me. It was difficult to actually keep upright, keep steady on the elephant, as you probably heard from the way the tape was being thrown around, because I was perched up right on the front behind the elephant's driver, and the elephant was extremely unhappy during this ding-dong with the tiger, and was jumping about, so that it was like when you're on the top of a bus, you know, you walk along top of a bus and someone says, "Sea's rough today." It was like that, but it was the most amazing experience of my life, because out of this this grass, and you can't see the tiger when it's in the grass, came this 10-11 foot cat weighing about 500 pounds, just an orange and black blur of muscle, ready to eat somebody. And I'm sitting up there thinking it's going to be me.
Ah! Well, I'm glad it wasn't. Thanks again, Dr. Pete. And next week on the programme, Dr. Pete will be telling us about all the different ways he travelled through the jungles of Nepal. So join us then. Now, though, part three of The Witch's Revenge.
Philip has flown back to Beaver Island on the magic kite, pursued by Oyin the Witch. Philip and Baby Bee decide to go round the island to warn all the animals to take shelter in Beaver Towers.
Ready, Flip-Flip?
Ready.
Be as quick as you can, and make sure you're back here before sunset. Oyin loves the dark, and she could try her next trick at any time. Last one to the woods is a slug!
Hey, I wasn't ready! Wait for me, Baby Bee! I said wait! That's all the beavers, I think. And the badgers. Hedgehogs. Any more?
Yes! Yes!
No.
Yes!
No.
Whatever are you doing?
Tricking my plants!
All right. Pardon?
Mr. Stripe, my teacher says I've got to check my plants every time I go out. If I can eat it, it's a yes. If I can't, it's because it's poisonous. It's a no.
They all look the same to me.
Oh, then you must be near the bottom of your class.
Cheek. I'm near the top, actually. We don't do plants. We do maths and geography. Come on, we've lots to do yet.
What's grography, Flippip?
It's geography. It's about different countries. Maps and things.
Ah.
Hey, we could do a map of the island. It'd help us plan our fight with Oyin.
Yeah.
Come on, tell me everything's name as we go along.
Right. Okay, Flippip. This is the River Busy. Fancy a swim?
No, thanks. And we haven't the time.
This takes us to the sea. That's near where the rabbits live. We'd better tell them about Oyin. Hello, rabbits.
Do they ever stop eating?
I don't think so. Rabbits, listen. Grandpa said you mustn't dawdle. You have to be inside Beaver Towers by dark.
Just finishing our lunch. Come on, you lot. We can have dinner and supper on the way.
Look at the time. We'll have to head back.
We'll have to tell the sheep in that field. We can't just leave them.
Oh, I suppose not. We really will have to hurry, though.
Make so much noise, Flippip.
It's all right for you. I'm not used to being in a forest in the dark. Are you sure Beaver Towers is this way?
Oh, absolutely. I think.
Oh, terrific. Grandpa Edgar will be really angry with us. We shouldn't have bothered with the sheep. They took no notice anyway. I've never met such silly things. Listen. What's that noise? I'm not moving.
Neither am I. So who is? Oh, I'm scared, Flippip.
What you need is a clear head and don't panic. Run for it, baby bee!
Oh, yes. Ow! Oh. Weasel!
Oh, you're sitting on my tail.
That's you right. Spying again. You should be ashamed.
Oh, I am. Honestly, it's this spell. I can't help myself. Oh, dearie me.
Look, come with us to Beaver Towers.
Yeah, I'd better not. I'd have to tell Oyen all your plans.
Have you been following us all day? Oh, really?
Can I go now? I won't tell her about the map you're making. I think. I hope.
I'll try not to anyway.
Oh, you can go.
Oh, you don't know what it's like when Oyen shouts. Tisho! And I think I banged my nose.
That's it. Get the drawbridge right up.
Eve, we've been so worried about you.
It was the sheep. They just wouldn't listen.
Always were stubborn things.
And we got lost in the forest. And we caught the weasel spying.
Oh. Best say nothing to his mother, poor thing.
I'd better not.
I think we've had enough excitement for one day. Best get these young'uns to bed, Mrs. Badger.
Right. Come on now, time for bed. And that includes you, Nick Hedgehog. There's no use you hiding there.
School tomorrow.
School? Here? Mr. Stripe insists. Now, we can't let a little thing like a witch interfere with your education.
Not school.
Oh, flipping flippers.
The tail of a muggle fish and a pinch of grand bat's teeth. One of my better spell potions, I think. Wizard!
Hear your spellship! Oh, that's not supper, is it?
Be careful, Weasel. Or supper, maybe you.
Oh, dear, I wouldn't recommend me. Look, I'm all skin and bone. Just look at these ribs all sticking through.
Silence! Report! Now, you followed the boy and the beaver.
All day. I'm really pooped. Yes, they went all round the island, your opulence. Yes, yes, warning the animals. They'll all be in Beaver Towers by now, except the sheep.
Oh, fools. They think they'll be safe there. What else?
Nothing else. Really? Honest. Double honest.
There is something. Something you overheard.
No, that's it. Oh, dear, it's been a long day. I'll just go and make some cocoa.
Come back. I warned you, Weasel.
Not more spells, please.
I'm
turning orange. Oh, and sprouting leaves.
A carrot, yes. The rabbits will love you. Tell me.
It was nothing.
Oh, I'm fishing long.
Oh, look at my lovely food. Noodles.
Slime.
Worms are slimy. Ooh. Here, buddies. Here. Tell me.
I'll tell you. It's a map. The boy is making a map. Oh, thank goodness. Back to my wheezy weasel self. Go! You see, the boy is making a map of the island to help beat you.
Map, eh? I don't know, though. If you wanted to see the shape of the island, where better than from the air? Yes.
Beavers and boys don't fly your airship.
No, but kites do. Especially magic kites. A ride on the magic kite is called for, I think.
So, will Oyen's air spell destroy Philip and his kite?
Find out next week in episode 4. Also next week, I take a trip through a tropical rainforest in central London, and Purwell and Dogsbody go to Scotland to search for the Star of McTwinkle. All that next week. Join me then. Bye-bye.
Cat's Whiskers was presented by Andy Crane. Stanley Bagshaw and the 22-ton Whale by Bob Wilson was read by Paul Copley. The Witch's Revenge by Nigel Hinton was adapted by Neil Shenton and directed by Caroline Smith. Those taking part were Marlene Sidaway, Mark Murphy, David King, John Bramwell, Elizabeth Mansfield, David Ross and James Green. The researcher was Liz Roberts, and the programme was produced in Manchester by Mary Callum-Carrion.